Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Highly Conflicted. This week, Trump says Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff are the enemies from within. That comes after Trump was exposed as saying he wanted his generals to be like Hitler's generals. And also, Trump said this week that he would fire Jack Smith within 2 minutes and that he wouldn't be impeached for it if he was re-elected for a second term. Plus, America PAC, that's Elon Musk's America PAC that has been doing Trump's ground game on the former president's behalf, has been hit with fraud claims, basically claiming that they've hit all these doors in all these battleground states, where now reporting shows that as much as 20 to 25% in some of these states may have been fraudulent. And on Sunday, Trump doubles down on his immigration claim and how Kamala Harris was the border czar and how she screwed it all up as his closing message for this campaign as we hit the last stretch of this presidential cycle. I want to get into the Trump comments about Pelosi and Schiff and Hitler and Jack Smith first, because what Trump has done this week is to lay out everything in the open. For instance, with Jack Smith, we've been reporting for a long time that, you know, he would fire Jack Smith, obviously, if he got back into office, because Jack Smith brought these cases against him and he didn't like them and he thought them as a witch hunt. But for the first time this week, he's expressly said what he has not been able to say in the open previously. And he says, you know, we're just going to fire him in two minutes and I'm not going to be impeached. The reason why Trump couldn't say it before is when these cases were still a pending threat to him in court many, many months ago, if he had said something like this, it would have been pulled up in court, for instance, both in the documents case and in the federal January 6th case. I think the reason why Trump has been able to come out and just say it so explicitly is because, number one, he feels like he's on a glide path to victory. That may or may not be true, and we'll explore that later. But also because the cases have largely taken a backseat in this campaign. The classified documents case has obviously been dismissed in the Southern District of Florida by Judge Aileen Cannon. Jack Smith is appealing that, but it has gone away for now. And in the federal January 6th case, Judge Chutkan is presiding over what will be a very slow and heavy slog to get this case back on track if Trump loses the election. And that's, of course, because of the Supreme Court's ruling. I think it shows you that Trump and his advisors and his lawyers really see themselves as having won in the game that they've seen themselves playing against the special counsel's office. And part of that is true, right? This time last year, we were thinking that Jack Smith was going to have Trump in two separate criminal cases. We were going to have these cases go to trial before the election, and that Trump's campaign was going to be stymied or hobbled by Trump having to be in a courtroom week after week in the final stretch of the campaign. And obviously, none of that has come to pass. The only criminal case that we have had this election cycle, when we were on track to once have three, or if not four, was the Manhattan criminal case, the Stormy Daniels hush money case, which of course, is, you know, as we have reported previously, in many ways was the 2016 election interference case. And that's really important because Trump feels like he's on an upswing. And when he's on an upswing, he makes very, very plain what he wants done. For him to say that Jack Smith would be fired immediately and that there would be no repercussions, he's saying that because he really means that. And it's abundantly clear that in the second term, the administration, a Trump administration, would be filled with people that would allow him to do that. We're basically laying the precedent here. He's basically saying repeatedly what he's going to do and that no one should be surprised when it actually happens. Let's just take the special counsel's situation as an example. In the first Trump administration, Trump wanted the first special counsel, Robert Mueller, to be fired. He was effectively stymied by Don McGahn, the then White House counsel, because McGahn didn't agree with him, didn't agree with his rationale, and threatened to quit if Trump continued to order him to carry out that directive. Trump effectively then backed down because he didn't want McGahn to quit. He also disliked that confrontation. He also saw that it was not an immediately viable approach. And Mueller stayed in his position through to the end of his investigation. That sort of scenario, guys, is not going to happen in a second Trump administration. This week, we saw a bunch of names getting bandied around for attorney general, for other positions in the Justice Department, other positions in the White House counsel's office. What our reporting shows this week is that there will be extremely loyal and pliant people placed into top places inside the Justice Department and in the White House counsel's office. ABC reported this week that Judge Ian Cannon's name was even floated at one point for the attorney general role. In our own reporting, we can confirm that that actually did come up once, although her name was quickly struck off. And I think really we're looking at people like Mark Paoletta or Sean Cooksey, two Trump admin era people who have stayed inside the federal government at the FEC and at the SEC. And those are the kinds of people that I think you would expect to see in a second Trump term Justice Department. Of course, you'd also see people like Jeff Clark, whose name has been floated from everything from Deputy Attorney General to the PAYDAG, that's the principal deputy to the Deputy Attorney General, basically helps run the day-to-day of the Justice Department. It is a Senate-confirmed position, but as we again learned in the first Trump admin, a lot of these guys could serve in an acting capacity, and Trump has been more than willing to let that happen and to let the norm of having these Senate-confirmed positions actually filled by Senate-confirmed appointees lapse. And so when you think about the structure of the Justice Department and then over at the White House counsel's office, you're hearing names like Todd Blanche, that's Trump's current lawyer, who shepherded him through all of his legal cases and continues to do so. The back channeling that I've heard is if Todd Blanche wants to be the White House counsel, that job is his. And as for other people on Trump's current legal team, if they want other big jobs and big positions in the federal government, they could also have them. Think, for instance, John Sauer, the appellate expert who came up with the presidential immunity argument. He could be your next Solicitor General if Trump wins. And so when you look at it in its totality and you see how the federal government, especially at DOJ and the White House, may look in a second Trump term, it should come as no surprise to you when Trump says, you know, I'm going to fire Jack Smith and no one will blink an eye. I think that's doubly true when you listen to how Howard Lutnick, who's the co-chair of Trump's transition team, talk in his various media hits. You know, recently I watched him on Bloomberg TV, on Bloomberg Surveillance, where he effectively said, everyone who works for Trump in a second administration to a man will have to be loyal to Trump first. Of course, that's not how the federal government's supposed to work. You're supposed to be loyal to the Constitution. You swear an oath to the Constitution, not the president. But in Howard Lutnick's telling of this, and it makes for compelling TV viewing, which is why I think people, when they watch it, go, yeah, that totally makes sense, except when you then think about it a little bit more, maybe it doesn't quite make sense, which is Howard Lutnick's analogy to all of this is to say, let's run the federal government like a business. And on Bloomberg, he looked around and said, of course, if you work for Cantor Fitzgerald, which is Howard Lutnick's company, you would have to be loyal to Howard Lutnick. If you work for Bloomberg, you would have to be loyal to Mike Bloomberg. That's true and all well and good for a private business. But for the federal government, it's a little more nuanced than that. Yes, when your commander in chief says, you know, this is the policy we're going to go with, there is a degree of needing the rest of the government to follow through and to carry out the wishes of the president. But the president is not an all-knowing, all-powerful guy. Well, he is all-powerful, but he's not an all-knowing guy. And so that's why you have these advisors on board. And if all your advisors are just yes men who are just happy to cater to Trump's whims, then what you're not getting is perhaps the most erudite advisory sounding board that you would want the president to have. And I think that's kind of where Lutnick's analysis of this breaks down. He says, you know, it's fine to have the discussion, but ultimately when the president decides the president decides. That's true. But with Trump, if you staff the administration the way that we're talking about it being staffed, you might not get that level of expertise. You might not get, you know, if you think back to the first administration, people like Fiona Hill, Russia experts, Ukraine experts. So that, I think, is the concern when you see Trump and Howard Lutnick, the chair of the Trump transition, talk about people needing to be loyal to Trump as an individual. Which kind of brings us back to the wider points about Trump saying he wanted people like Hitler's generals around him. It follows straight into Trump's previous comments about how he wants someone like Roy Cohn around him, his famous fixer lawyer. It's all coming down to loyalty. And in the final stages of the campaign, his campaign message has been to remind people that the entire federal government needs to be loyal to him. And if Trump wins and this comes to pass, you will have been warned. He's saying it out in public now. This should come as no surprise to anyone. And that's the backdrop of this election. You know, we're 2 weeks out from Election Day. And if there are undecided voters out there who are looking at this and thinking, how would a second administration, how would a second Trump administration look? You know full well how it's going to look because Trump has already told you. Now, coming back to whether or not Trump is actually going to win is turnout. I'm increasingly of the opinion that this election will be based on small pockets of turnout in some of these battleground states. Yes, there may be undecided voters in various places, but the Trump campaign's strategy this cycle has been to turn out low propensity voters, people who don't typically vote, and turn out low propensity voters who are obviously for Trump, and get them to return a ballot. And their theory is if we can juice turnout among all these Trump voters who don't typically vote, then that might be enough for us to carry some of these battleground states by slim margins. Let me give you an example. You know, one area that Turning Point Action, one of the PACs involved in the ground games, are approaching door knocking in Arizona is to say, hey, you know, Paul Gosar's district, ruby red district in Arizona. And if we can juice turnout by 10, 20, 30% even, that might be the equivalent of 3, 4, 5, 6,000 votes. And if they can replicate that in 1, 2, 3 congressional districts across the state, then you're looking at maybe even up to 10,000 votes, 11,000, 15,000 votes. That could be the margin of victory in this election. And I think increasingly the ground game is important because of how close it is right now. You know, we're going into the last 2 weeks here, the final New York Times Siena poll, the final ABC Ipsos poll, having both candidates tied 47%, 48%. And so in a race like this, this is where turnout matters and this is where ground game matters. Now, there is one element here which our reporting suggests could be advantageous to the Harris campaign. And that's the Trump campaign's reliance on Elon Musk's America PAC. We reported earlier this week for TheGuardian.com that Trump's campaign may be failing to reach thousands of voters they hope to turn out in Arizona and Nevada in particular, because America PAC's canvassers, people who are knocking on the doors, may not actually be knocking on about 20 to 25% of the doors that they say they're knocking on. These potentially fake door knocks, when canvassers basically say, yes, we went up to a door, knocked on it, and there was no one home, or they entered the survey and they falsified survey responses, that could present a serious setback for Trump as a result of the fact that he just simply won't be reaching these voters. The reason we know about the 20 to 25% is because I got access to America PAC's backend systems. And through what are known as unusual survey logs, it's an auditing function that's built into their canvassing platform, about 20 to 25% of doors are being flagged. Now, America PAC, for their part, came back to me and said, well, 20 to 25% is a little high, and we actually think the fraud is much, much closer to single-digit percent, if not zero, because we have our own robust auditing systems, and we don't use Campaign Psychic's auditing system because it's just not a very good auditing platform. For instance, they will say that the GPS tracking is terrible, or that there are a lot of false, you know, quote unquote false positives, basically where the system is too sensitive and trips or flags a door, which really was fine when you go back and look at it manually. Because I had backend access to these systems, I went and checked, and we pulled a small sample out of the population of door knockers in Arizona, and we ran a little test. With my statistics background, I basically figured out I should take maybe a 26 canvasser sample size out of a universe of 442 canvases to conduct a test at the 70% confidence level with a 10% margin of error. And what I did was I sat there and went through the unusual activity logs for every one of these 26 randomly selected AmericaPack canvases. If there was a false positive, well, we would chuck it out. And I was pretty generous. I mean, we're looking at, you know, a false positive where the system is tripping because a canvasser marked a door as knocked, I don't know, more than 300 feet or 400 feet, even a block down from where the house was. That in itself is suspicious, but we're being very generous here. Even allowing for that, the fail rate for that sample set was closer to 30%. It was actually higher than the population average. And so my conclusion from that is, as a whole, the Campaign Sidekick canvassing platform is actually pretty good at picking out instances that are clearly fake. And, you know, we put this in the story about how one of the canvases appeared to be hitting doors, or was marking as hitting doors in rural Globe, Arizona, the middle of freaking nowhere, where the javelinas roam, sitting at a restaurant called Guayo's on the Trail. And I looked it up and it looks good. It's a little Tex-Mex restaurant on this highway that cuts through rural Arizona. So we saw, you know, multiple instances of this. And a lot of this is the Trump campaign's own fault, in truth. It's not necessarily, you know, AmericaPack's fault, because the background to this situation is the Trump campaign decided, when it took over the RNC earlier this year, that it was going to fire everyone and start from scratch. It was going to fire everyone from their kind of get out the vote effort and focus all the money in what they call election integrity. That's basically when lawyers are going through the voter rolls and suing state and county election commissions and saying, you know, you've got all these illegals on the roll, or you've got all these dead people, or whatever they want to say. And all of their efforts went into that. As a result, they also outsourced the day-to-day ground game to third parties, the outside groups. And the biggest group to take on this mantle was AmericaPack. The problem was the job is actually really big. I mean, if you think about it, you know, AmericaPack has basically taken on the majority of the ground game work for the Trump campaign. We're really talking about hitting hundreds of thousands of doors multiple times in a very, very short space of time. AmericaPack started doing these doors, I think, in early September, late August, early September. And for instance, in Arizona, they were supposed to do three passes of 350,000 doors approximately. That's about 1.5 million doors. As of the middle of October, based on the data that I saw, they'd hit about 470,000 doors. So they were running just short of just less than half, less than 50%, with 3 weeks until the election. So this was a couple of weeks ago. That's not a good return. And of those 470,000 doors, only about 170 had been actually canvassed, as in the other 300,000 were either marked as not home, couldn't find an address, refused survey. There's a whole bunch of other inputs that canvassers can put in. But only 170,000 doors as of 10/17 in Arizona had been actually canvassed, where they went up to a door, made voter contact with a voter, and filled out this survey. We followed up this reporting, by the way, with additional stories, including about how some AmericaPack canvassers in Arizona and Nevada were using so-called GPS spoofing to fake the doors that they had done. We basically obtained a video, a bootleg how-to video that shows other canvassers how they could go into the Campaign Sidekick app, use a location-changing app simultaneously to dupe their canvassing app into thinking they were at a particular location when they weren't. And the how-to spoof video is as we saw it and reported on, you know, shows the apparent ease with which locations can be changed, calling into question again just how many doors have been reached by the AmericaPack operation. AmericaPack again has denied that they're experiencing large numbers of fraud, especially with respect to GPS spoofing. They basically said in a statement that every door that is marked leaves unique fingerprints, and the fingerprints of a door marked with the spoofing app leave those fingerprints in neon colors. We have tech-enabled auditing and fraud prevention tools to identify and dismiss the bad apples. The pack doesn't pay a dime, and the door gets knocked by the next canvasser. We went and had a look at that claim that they provided on the record, and what we found is their auditing tools is maybe not as robust as that statement sounds. Every canvasser in Arizona and Nevada has to walk around with a second app that checks their location. But it's not like it's a super high specific app that is only doing location data. It's actually QuickBooks Workforce. It's the companion app to Intuit QuickBooks, the invoice company. And basically what it is, it's a clock in, clock out system where the canvassers, you actually work for a subcontractor called Blitz Canvassing, clock in when they start their shift and clock out when they finish their shift. And it does have a geo-tracking feature in it. But we spoke to multiple current and former auditors working for Blitz's operation and AMPAC, the America PAC. And they said, you know, as far as the auditing goes, we don't check that app as a first port of call. We only really check it if it looks bad on Campaign Sidekick. Now, publicly, America PAC might dispute this, but our reporting suggests that even if the location is being tracked to some degree by their secondary clock in, clock out time card app, it's only if something seems amiss on the principal platform. So it's unclear actually how much of this is getting audited and how many of these doors that America PAC are saying they're hitting are actually getting hit. And this is the problem with paid canvassing as a whole. You know, paid canvassers are doing this for a check. You know, some of these, in fact, all the canvassers all in Arizona and Nevada are getting paid by the hour. And they're contracted to work, I think, a minimum of 6 hours in some cases. And it's a slog. You have to walk through the summer heat, now the fall heat, in these really rural areas, knocking on doors, and it's really tedious. As part of our verification and reporting for the story about how many doors are getting flagged as part of their unusual activity logs, how many doors are getting flagged as suspiciously fake, in other words, I'd map out these routes on Google Maps. And you could see, based on the pins, because it tracks location, you know, clearly in some instances, a canvasser walked up, you know, the base of this hill, and he could see that the house was just beyond the ridge. And he clearly decided, you know what, I don't want to walk all the way over there. I don't want to walk, you know, crest the ridge in this Arizona heat. Like there's like cacti everywhere, right? You know, and it honestly looks like the desert. And he clearly decided he was just going to mark it as not home. And he marked not home from what, several thousand feet away. So clearly he didn't walk all the way up to the house. And for all of America PAC trying to say, oh yeah, you know, the GPS system in Campaign Sidekick is bad, it's not that bad that it's off by several thousand feet. Look, these guys fraud. It's okay to admit that. And, you know, these are the instances. And it is certainly tricky to build up a paid canvassing operation to the size that America PAC has done. And they've had to scale up really quickly. And it is clear that when you scale up that quickly, you're going to get more instances of fraud because there are plenty of dishonest actors. But that's where the Harris campaign has a massive advantage, because they have volunteers who are doing their door knocking. The Trump campaign in the main does not. The thing with hardcore volunteers, these guys are happy to walk that final mile, those final 4,000 feet to that house on the ridge of a battleground state to reach that photo, because they care about it. They really care about the cause. They want that candidate to win. The paid canvassers, not so much. And I think the Trump campaign is running into the age-old problem you have with paid canvassing, which is these guys are mercenaries. They just don't want it as much as volunteers. And when push comes to shove, especially in some of these rural areas or these, you know, sketchy suburban areas, you sometimes don't want to walk up to that door, and it's totally understandable. But for America PAC to turn around and say, you know, there's no fraud, it's just not believable. And based on what we could see, there is about a 20 to 25% rate of suspected frauded doors. All of which to say, if Trump wins, it won't be because of Elon Musk. Elon will take credit for it regardless, but the data has shown that it's not America PAC that will have delivered Trump the victory in this election. We're already seeing some of the early returns And it's clear that Republicans are voting in record numbers by early vote. But it's happening across the board. Yes, it's happening in some of these battleground states where America PAC is involved, but it's also happening in places like Florida and Texas, which are not battleground states where America PAC is not involved. So if it's happening across the board, you know, just anecdotally looking at this from 30,000 feet, you know it's not because America PAC has some secret sauce in these battleground states. There is something else at play. And while we may not know exactly what it is until after the election, it's certainly not Elon Musk's America PAC. All of which takes us to the final stretch of the campaign. On Sunday, Trump's going to be speaking at Madison Square Garden. His lifelong dream apparently will be achieved as he delivers his final major, major rally of the campaign in New York. It clearly has significance for him in multiple ways. Maybe this was young boy Trump or young developer Trump from Queens looking across the river into Manhattan and wanting to have a big political rally in the center of New York. And he's finally going to be able to realize that. But what's been really interesting is also his messaging. He's really doubled down on immigration in the final 2 weeks. And we expect that to be one of his major closing messages as he goes into the final days of this election cycle. And it's really quite interesting, and the Times has also done some reporting on this, but it is self-evident if you spend any time listening to his rallies, which I hope you don't because they go on for a long time. Side note, they go on for a long time because we're told Trump knows that a lot of his supporters wait many, many hours to go to his rallies, and so he's trying to put on a show for them. And so he feels compelled to speak extra long when really actually if he kept it at 1 hour less, it's probably better for everyone, not least because there's a reason why movies are only 1 to 1.5 hours long. It's because people's attention spans are not that long. But Trump effectively wants to put on a show. And our expectation, obviously, at this rally on Sunday in New York is that it will be about immigration and that it will go on for God knows how long. But the immigration point's really interesting. Trump really draws a lot of energy from his crowds. And Trump has decided that every time he talks about immigration, it gets the biggest cheers from his supporters. Much more so than if he talks about the economy or the tariffs or what he perceives to be boring, which is quite interesting that in the final week of the campaign, we're still getting candidate Trump talking about what he wants to talk about, as opposed to what his advisors and frankly, internal polling shows to be the most effective message for voters in this election. Yes, they care about immigration, but to a degree, they also want to hear about his kind of policies or his ideas and what he wants to talk about with respect to tariffs and reducing inflation and the cost of living. But Trump doesn't want to focus on it because he's much more entertained talking about immigration and talking about, you know, the caravans coming across the southern border. And with, I think he talks about these guys having calves like cantaloupe. You know, he's basically saying these drug mules are, you know, carrying so many drugs that their calves are huge. But that's the closing message, and it's been abundantly clear for several weeks now, and that is going to be his campaign for 2024. We'll see exactly how it pans out, and we'll have more next week in our episode on how the early returns are coming out. What we're watching for is whether the early voting by Republicans will cannibalize the day of vote. In the past, Republicans obviously have been very skittish, in part because of Trump, of voting by mail or voting early. But for the first time this cycle, Republicans are voting in record numbers by early ballot and mail-in ballot. The second thing I'll be interested in looking at is whether low propensity voters are the ones voting by mail or if it's regular propensity voters. If it's low propensity voters, that could mean that not only does Trump have an advantage going into election night, but that his strategy of hitting low, of juicing turnout may be the thing that gets him over the line. But that's in next week's episode, when we're joined again with MSNBC's Katie Fang for a last look at the election. We'll be right back.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.